Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so we established the Supreme Lord is one, he has no rival. Because he is limitless, he has all powers, even though he remains beyond the touch of the modes of the material nature. So then, Krishna, we're continuing with quotes to support this. Narada Pancharatra, it is said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the world of matter, who is the supreme object of worship, whose desires are all fulfilled, and whom all living entities yearn to obtain, is described in the Pancharatras. Right, so Pancharatras is the Vedic literatures, then the essential points from them that are all about the Supreme Lord. In other words, anything that's directly describing the Lord, anything that is actual worship of the Lord, or anything that is in support of that worship, like you have to perform achman or take a bath to do that worship. So therefore, those things from the Vedas, those are all extracted. And then that's the Pancharatra. Right? So the Pancharatra will always talk about Vishnu. It won't talk about anybody else. So, So the Pancharatra is a para vidya, shastra. Right? It's just like you have the Vedanta Sutra, like that, or Upanishads, then the Pancharatra, these are all dealing with transcendental knowledge. All other branches of the Vedas are dealing with material knowledge, but that material knowledge that's in pursuance of the spiritual. Does that make sense? So they're just farther extended than the Pancharatra. Pancharatra has elements. Right? Here someone may protest. You consider the Supreme both beyond the modes of material nature and the master of all potencies. How is it possible to ascribe these two mutual contradictory natures to the Lord, right? Because he said that he is beyond everything, but he has all potency. So that means he's involved in everything, but at the same time he's beyond it. So their point is, how can you say both of these things that are contradictory? He's involved, but he's not involved. So that was the doubt that may come up. So in the following words, the author of the sutras refutes this protest. Sutra 3. No one should be surprised that the Supreme possesses mutually contradictory natures. Srila Prabhupada explains the conceivable nature of the Lord and his potencies in his purport to Mantra 5. Quote, here is a description of some of the Supreme Lord's transcendental activities, executed by his inconceivable potencies. The contradictions given here prove the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. He walks and he does not walk. Ordinarily, if someone can walk, it is illogical to say he cannot walk. But in reference to God, such a contradiction simply serves to indicate his inconceivable power. Notice here it says he walks, he does not walk. Right, so it's establishing his position. He is a person. He walks. He is involved. He is active. But at the same time, he does not walk. Right? We tend to explain it. He does not walk, but he walks. You understand? It's a difference. So they're establishing his natural position, and then his relationship with the material nature. Right, so the spiritual realm is fully manifest in all his potencies. Here, even though he's controlling everything, he's not involved like that. So everything gets done, so he walks, but he is not involved, so he does not walk. Right? So it's saying it the other way. But in reference to God, such a contradiction simply serves to indicate his inconceivable power. With our limited fund of knowledge, we cannot accommodate such contradictions. And therefore, we conceive of the Lord in terms of our limited powers of understanding. Right? Because we say, well, that's not logical, because that's all you can accommodate. You know, just like a child can't accommodate some of the contradictions that are there in law and in the adult world.
You know, so then if you take it that the child has the right to, since until he understands it, it's not real, right? But you say, no, that's foolishness, right? So in the same way is that the Lord, then he is beyond our understanding. So those contradictions are not at fault. They're actually showing his greatness. Our intelligence is actually limited. Like that. So it's something beyond. So it's not just a matter of faith. Oh, you're just saying that because you don't have it. No, this is just the way it is. You know, it's something beyond what we can understand. You know, like that. Because contradictions exist. As they go, they show the potency of the power of it. You know, you have in the quantum physics where the two things can happen simultaneously. You know, that are the same. The same object can be doing two things at once. Right? So if dead matter can do that, why can't the Lord, who is the source of this matter, do it? You know?
Like that.
For example, the impersonalist philosophers of the Mayavadi school accept only the Lord's impersonal activities and reject his personal feature. But the members of the Bhagavat school, adopting the perfect conception of the Lord, accept his inconceivable potencies, and thus understand that he is both personal and impersonal. This is very important to hear. The impersonalist means he only accepts the impersonal. That's why he's called an impersonalist. So in that, we reject that concept. It doesn't mean we reject Krishna's impersonal features. Right? But we don't, like them, take them as supreme or special on their own. Right? So the devotees are able to deal with the Brahman element, you know, for extracting oneself from the material energy, for establishing self on the transcendental platform. But that is all being done in connection with Krishna as a person. Right? Krishna as a person, he has impersonal features. So those impersonal features are very good at getting us out of the material, so-called material personal features. Right? We have difficulty taking up, surrendering to Krishna and taking up the transcendental personal features because of our attachment to the material or personal features. So you extract yourself from the material personal features through Krishna's impersonal aspects. Right? Having done that, then one is able to very nicely attach oneself to the personal features of Krishna. Does this make sense? Means something's personal, it's attractive. Something's impersonal, not so attractive. Right? So if you take the material nature, its personal aspects, means those things of this world that we're attached to, right? We give it, you know, that it's, you know, it has form, it has, you know, experiences, it has so many things, right? Now, because of that, we're unable to transfer the attachment to Krishna. Because Krishna, you know, if we like the forms here, Krishna's much better forms. We like the interaction here, they're much better there. But because of the attachment here, we have a problem with attaching ourselves there, right? So then the impersonal feature is used to detach ourselves here, in that the impersonal feature is technically not actually impersonal, because it's still Krishna's impersonal features, but it's Krishna's impersonal features, right? So the Brahman is just the effulgence of the qualities. Right, so the effulgence will have some aspect of the quality. So that effulgence is actually what is imbuing this material energy and making it look like it's alive, like it actually is personal. Right, so Krishna's impersonal features actually empower dead matter to make it look alive. Right, so Krishna's impersonal feature still, you know, is personal. Like that. So because it's actually Krishna that's attractive in the dead matter, not the dead matter itself, then we bring ourselves from the attachment to the dead matter to that it's actually Krishna. right? But when we're thinking it, we're not thinking, oh, it's the Brahman. We understand through the Brahman, Krishna's making the material energy work. But it's Krishna who's doing this. So our attention immediately goes to Krishna. That's the Bhagavad school. The impersonalists know it's Brahman, and then their focus stays on Brahman. Right? Their goal is Brahman. Does that make sense? Right? So it's not the dead matter, it's the Brahman, so therefore they focus just on Brahman, and that's it, that's their goal. But the devotee knows it's not the material energy, it's the Brahman. So therefore they know the Brahman comes from Krishna, so it's Krishna who's empowering everything here and making everything attractive. You know that verse that was said before in Bhagavatam. No, actually in the Pancharatra, the one we just read. Whose desires are fulfilled, and whom all living entities yearn to obtain. Right? It says all living entities. They're not talking about, well, in the future when they do take up Krishna consciousness, they will yearn. It means all of them are yearning now, because the jiva can't be separate from the Lord. So what's happening is the jiva is wanting to be God, so that separates him from the Lord. But he's actually trying to obtain the Lord, because there is nothing else to obtain. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the son, unscrupulous son, is trying to get a hold of his father's money, but it's still his father's money he's trying to get a hold of. So that's, you know, the his father's potency. He'll, in his own mind, you know, somehow or another, separate the money from his father, so then it looks like it's just money. So then it seems, you know, fair enough to try to obtain it. You know, as long as you see that it's your father's money, then there's the element of morality is there, or, you know, other things like that. But if it's not the father, or the father doesn't deserve, or this or that, then you can try to take it for yourself. Right? So in the same way as the impersonalists just see it as money, the materialists just see it as money. The devotees see it as Krishna's. So therefore, when they understand actually the attractive element of the material nature is Krishna's Brahman, his potency, then their attention turns to Krishna as a person. So then you extract from the material attraction and attachment to spiritual. Does that make sense? So the process of pulling yourself out of material attachment is the same for the impersonalist and for the devotee, not the Mayavadis, the impersonalist, right? But the difference is the Bhagavat school accepts both the personal and impersonal. You know, it's like you take out a thorn with a thorn. The thorn's bad, right? But the thorn can take out the thorn. Right? So dealing with the material energy can remove the need for the dealing with material energy, because actually you're understanding that the material energy is actually just a manifestation of Krishna's Brahman. Does that make sense? It's dead matter, but because of Krishna's qualities being applied upon it, therefore you get all this unlimited variety and qualities and experiences and all that. Does that make sense? Like that. Same thing that we've discussed before, it's just stating it in a different way. Right? Like that. The Bhagavatas know that without inconceivable potencies, there can be no meaning to the words Supreme Lord. The fact is that there is nothing but God within and without. Everything is the manifestation of his different energies. And in this way, there is oneness among the diverse energies. Although there is oneness, however, the Lord in his personal form still enjoys unlimitedly all the pleasures enjoyed minutely by the tiny part and parcel living entities. Right? So he's pointing out everything is God. That's within and without, whatever is there. So within means that potency behind it, and without, whatever potency manifests the form. Right? So the potency of strength in the pillar is Krishna. And the potency of the manifestation of the pillar to serve that potency of strength. They're both Krishna. So within and without. Within is what is the cause of it, or what is the reason for the form, and without is the form that we see, we perceive. Does that make sense? You know, you have within is the concept of economic or wealth, and without then whatever form that's in, you know, the way of money or gold or jewels or whatever we consider of value. You know, something that you could use as an economic tool. I have land, I can trade that for something else. So, you know what I'm saying? You have something, it's just a rock. This is just a rock. But now if you have a rock, then I want and you want this rock, we can change. So then it becomes empowered with the economic potency. You understand? And so that's within. Without, then it has the form of a rock. So you have a doubt about what's the difference between this rock and the piece of paper with faces on it that the government prints and calls money. Technically speaking, no difference. Yeah, the rock, at least you can put it in the garden. Oh, no, you could mulch the paper like that. It would also do nice in the garden. Yeah. Yes? Yes, within is Krishna and without is Lakshmi. But we remember, when I'm using the term Lakshmi, I'm looking at it from the point of view that we understand that we're seeing it in connection to Krishna. You understand? Because as soon as the materialist looks at this and doesn't see Krishna, right, or even sees Krishna but wants to enjoy Lakshmi, she manifests as Mahamaya. Right, so it's not that everything is Lakshmi if you see it connection to Krishna. Otherwise, it's Mahamaya. I mean, they're the same person, just different manifestation. Your Swarup Shakti manifests as Yogamaya or Mahamaya. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yes. So the external would be Lakshmi's manifestation, or we would say the Mahamaya. So, and the internal is Krishna's potency, you know, behind that. Right? So, which is still part of the material manifestation. Right? So technically material, when we're saying it, means there's two things. There's material and then there's Maya. The Maya is that we don't see the potency, the external and internal manifestation of Krishna in this material world. That's illusion. So that's Maya. If you think anything internally or externally is separate from Krishna, that is Maya. Right? So that means everything has to be connected to Maya. So there's no such thing as I have a separate lifestyle, life other than Krishna consciousness. It doesn't exist. It's called illusion. It's called Maya, yes. But the point is the need for family and social interaction, the emotional need and all that, that's what's called dharma, which is religion, which is created by God. Right? Expanding from that, then from that, then expands artha, or economics, justice, and morality. That's also created by God. Expanding from that, then is sense gratification, because now you have the facility, but it's based on religious principles. Right, so then you have sense gratification, engaging of all the senses, you know, in with the sense, whatever is their sense object. Right, so then that's also, and liberation is also coming from. So dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, right, then what's beyond that other than devotion? Does that make sense? So if anyone sees that their life is not connected, or modern culture is not connected, or something like that, anything is not, the Lord's not involved in it, that is illusion. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point that's being brought out here, that the Upanishads are explaining, is that God is, means within and without of everything, but at the same time He is a person, is still separate from it and enjoying everything in a much greater degree than the living entity is trying to. Right? The living entity wants to enjoy and have his life and all these different things in rasa. The Lord's doing the same thing on the platform of perfection. You know, way beyond. Does that make sense? So the things that fine points is that it's there. So it's going to. That's why Krishna says it means as you surrender, He reciprocates. Right? You see it as dead matter, nothing to do with Krishna. Krishna then deals with you as dead matter that has nothing to do with Him. And so therefore the results of pious and impious activities is what you get. right? If you see it in relationship to Krishna, then you become freed from material entanglement. You don't see it in connection to Krishna, you become entangled. You see it as connected to Krishna, then you are freed. Right? So you see it on the Brahman platform, you are situated on the Brahman platform. You see it as mundane, you are situated mundane. If from that Brahman, then you remember Krishna as the person, then you become as situated as a devotee of Krishna. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Is that clear to everybody? Right. Is there any question on this point of this connection? Because it's all, we're discussing the same thing, whatever was discussed in the second canto. It's just that we're bringing in this element of these various depths that you can look at it and how you can always still see the masculine and feminine principle. Yes. Detachment means it's detachment from the mundane, but it can't remain that's all it is. See, a man can work in an environment where there is no, technically speaking, rasa. It's just as long as something is getting done. As long as there's an efficiency of an action producing a result, they can function in that environment for a short period of time. Women don't function in that environment. There must be rasa, there must be relationship, there must be exchange. That's why then the women's development of the detachment has to be simultaneous in attachment to Krishna. Well, it means what we're discussing here, women will also use. But it's like, well, if the Krishna is in that, then why don't I just deal with him as like in this way? So it's simultaneous. Well, the men could go on in this and then pull the whole thing back so that then when they start to deal with the material energy, then they can do it on this different platform. And then from that, then go to the next platform. So they can take it through like that. Well, women will do the same thing, but it's just instant. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's just the nature of it. Because the need to be connected to something is there. There could be no moment of non-connection. As soon as there's non-connection, the identity is lost, so therefore the function is lost, like that. Well, men, having the element of that independence, that then connecting yourself to something has an element of efficiency, it's not identity. You know what I'm saying? I connect so that, okay, I have a car, so therefore now I can get things done with the car. A woman also is getting things done, but it's connected with rasa, right? It means, okay, now I can, you know, do things for the family. You know, it's connected with the family, or it's, you know, some social prestige is there. But it's all a relationship. So externally it looks the same, but the internal motive why it's being done is different. You know what I'm saying? That's why sometimes there'll be a common understanding of a common effort. And somewhere along the process of gaining it, discussing it, gaining it, or having obtained it, there may be a misunderstanding. Because the man thinks the woman was thinking this. He'll think that she's thinking the same as him for why you're having it. Right? The man thinks, okay, you have a house, then it's efficient for maintaining the family. Right? Means you're taking care of the family, so they need a place. You need, you know, then it's stable, steady, you can keep all the paraphernalia you need for taking care of a family there. You know? So it's part of getting something done. Like that. But for the woman, then it's the security. It's the identity. You know, this is the place where the family can function. You understand? In other words, it's the same thing just seen from the other side. You know? You look at it from this way, you know, it's the masculine. You look at it from this way, it's the feminine. You know? But looking at it from this way means you're looking from this place at the masculine. So that connection makes a relation. The masculine is the other way. It's from the masculine point of view, looking at the feminine and creating the relationship. So there is a commonality, but you have to know that your perspective doesn't apply on the other person. They have their perspective. So there's the commonality of that interaction, and so the action is the same. The common point is the activity, therefore pastimes. Krishna, who is something different from everything else in the cosmic creation, and the creation interact, though they're different. So where do they interact? They can't be like Krishna, right? The energy can't be like Krishna and just exist, right? Right? And Krishna can't be dependent. Right? So therefore, actually as individuals, there are different. So the commonality is not there. The commonality is on the platform of interaction. Right? So that's what one is looking for. Does that make sense? One is looking for commonality of platform of interaction. That's how you match, right? So Krishna would go with Srimati Radharani, right? Ram goes with Sita. Does that make sense? Shiva goes with Parvati. Because the activity is common, right? Radharani, common, the element is spontaneous love. Sita will be the element of, you know, Maryada. You know, properly following the rules and religion and everything like that. So the others wouldn't match. You understand? Does that make sense? So what you're matching is the commonality of activity. You know? So therefore, you have a common identity you can work with, a common activity, and the common results. But still, how that's perceived, the men will look at it one way, the women will look at it another. Does that make sense? But it doesn't matter, because the commonality is there. There is a commonality. Is that okay? Does that work? Yeah. It's funny how you can explain the same thing and you just adjust it a touch and then it's like a new topic. You know, like that. You know, so we've only changed one page, right? And that's it's like a new topic. Okay, any other question on this? Okay, commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses mutually contradictory natures should not be a source of wonder. In the Svetas Upanishad, much of the time you see Prabhupada mentions it, here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning it. It's a common principle that in Sukadeva Goswami mentions it. He said it's not amazing that Krishna does this. You know, the activity is amazing, but it's not amazing that Krishna is doing it. Krishna swallowed the forest fire, he kills Aristasura, or does, you know, amazing stuff. That's what he does is amazing, but it's not amazing that Krishna can do it. You know, he's the Supreme Lord, he can do anything. So that's why he says it should not be a source of wonder that he has mutually contradictory things. That's what makes him God. Like that. Svetasvatara Upanishad 3:19, it is said, quote, although the Supreme Lord is described as having no hands or legs, he nonetheless accepts all sacrificial offerings and moves very quickly. He has no material eyes, yet he sees everything. He has no material ears, yet he hears everything. Right? So here they're giving a hint. He has no material like that, because that's what the impersonalists or that interested in spiritual can relate to that. There's no material. He just can't understand that he has spiritual. Because it could easily say, he has no material hands or legs, he has spiritual hands and legs. But because the impersonalist can't understand that, he would throw the whole thing out. But now we say this, we've said the same thing. He has no material ears, yet he hears everything. That means there must, if they're not material ears and he hears, he must have spiritual ears. Like that. So that's the thing. But their mistake is, therefore, then they'll deify, is that, okay, he has spiritual ears. Even if they accept he has spiritual ears, that means he can't hear material. Right? That's deism. Right? Is that you'll put him beyond, which is fine, but that's it. So that's what he's saying. The impersonalists have an understanding, which is true, but they only have half the understanding. The other half they don't accept. You know? So that's the point. You know, means if you're monotheistic, you deify the Lord. You know? And if you're polytheistic, then you pantheate the Lord or pantheize the Lord, you know? You know, that then pantheism comes in and says, okay, he's become everything. So it's all God. This pillar is God, and you know, this rock is God, and this rock is God. So you know, that's the difficulty, is that there is that, no, it's a combination of both. It's his potencies are in everything, so there is the divine element, but at the same time he's separate as a person. So he is the deity. But the problem is they deify him, then keep him on that side. He can't actually come this side. So if he can't come this side, then what does that mean? Who is boss? Right. And then if he wants to make this side nice, like he should, because we're a nice, upstanding, religious person, then he has to send somebody, and they'll take care of it. Right? But then there's a problem. We're here, and God's over there. So then you wouldn't want that, because we should be back with God, right? So therefore, you make who he sent into God. You understand the methods? So it still ends up, I am the supreme, you know, enjoyer. Like that. You know, and, but I don't mind relinquishing the control, as long as it's good. You know, like that. So therefore, it'll be heaven and very nice, and, you know, my daughter can... get all nice and cuddly with the talking lions and all that, you know. You don't ever see the pictures of tigers because they're not so furry and fuzzy, right? You know, the lions are nice and fuzzy and all that. So therefore, you know, like that. And just think, you don't have to, no expenses on buying stuffed animals, right? Like that. You know, think of all the money you save, you know. That makes sense? So then here in mantras 4 and 5, and then from Prabhupada's purport, there's a similar description. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place, he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything and yet is outside of everything. Right. So here we see is that the Upanishad is, the whole point is showing that this is a study of these various themes of these Adhikaranas of the Upanishad. Right? Does that make sense? Adhikarana means a philosophical point that's being made. That Adhikarana will have a natural stage of establishing that. That's your nyaya, right? Or technically panchanga nyaya, that you're going to make your statement. Then you're going to go through the process of, you know, establishing it, showing examples, you know, concluding. Like here, now we've shown the basic thing is that, you know, you have the Supreme Lord. You know, then he has all his potencies, he can do all these things, walk, not walk, all these different things. So that, then we give example. Then you're pointing out is that it's not contradictory to the impersonalist, just the impersonalist haven't taken the full picture. Therefore, then we see God in everything. You understand how it's working? So Ishupanishad is saying the same thing here. So these sutras are a study in Upanishadic, presentation of philosophy. Okay, in Bhagavad Gita 4:39-40, the Lord declares, a faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses
is eligible to receive such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. So now here we see we have to go beyond the impersonalists here. Like that. Or in that, the jnanis is that a man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge, right? So that's the jnana. So that's your jnana yoga. And who subdues his senses, right? Is eligible to receive the knowledge. So the two have to be going on at once. You see the knowledge in everything, but you have to control the senses. Therefore, they can understand this knowledge. They can come to the transcendental. Otherwise, you have, in your modern philosophy, and you have so many very intelligent people, very observant. They can see so much happening within the material energy. But because they're not trying to control the senses, subdue the senses, they can't actually get and actually appreciate the transcendental aspect of it. So they never really get to this transcendental platform, this impersonal platform. Like that. So that the two have to go together, because control of the senses means that you're dealing with desires and needs. Your endeavor is there. So the sambandhabhideya prayojana is in connection with it, right? You hear something, you contemplate it and practice it. Then that gives you, you are now more qualified for hearing more. So this is the same, this is out of Gita. So this is your tadvidhi pratipatena pariparshanena, sevaya. Right? So your sevaya means that you're applying it. So the senses have to be controlled to apply it. Right, so you hear the knowledge, then you contemplate it, who is dedicated to, so that means you're contemplating it. Right, then you apply it, out of dedication you're going to apply it with controlled senses. That makes you more qualified to hear and understand more. Then you apply that, then you learn more. So the process is very dynamic. Right, then he comes to the supreme spiritual peace. Right, spiritual peace means he'll be situated on that. So either, we can mean just for that moment, and he feels that, and that's good enough for the day, so he feels refreshed for the day, and then the next day you have your 5 minutes of yoga or whatever it is, so you gain your peace. Or it can mean even this lifetime, or, situated in Brahman, and however long you're in Brahman. So that would be your spiritual peace. Then you have supreme spiritual peace, means it's connected to the Lord, so therefore you're situated in service to the Lord. So that person, then he can come to the actual devotional service. Others won't. Does this make sense? Okay. And then, I see, we're doing two shlokas. And then Krishna continues in Gita. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not obtain God consciousness. Right? He doesn't say gross, stinky, smelly, meat-eating, fornicating, intoxicating, gross materialists who are ignorant and faith, who doubt the revealed scriptures. It just says persons. Very politically correct. So if one, but ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not obtain God consciousness. So if you doubt scriptures, you cannot become God conscious. Because as Lord Chaitanya's Dasamul, it is the first point. You accept the authority of Shastra, then you can understand the other 9 points. You don't accept Shastra, you will not understand. You may be very intelligent, but that's not the qualification. The qualification is that you're dedicated to this science. You have the faith in it, and you're trying to apply it with controlled senses. Right? Does that make sense? They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness, neither in this world nor in the next. So someone who doubts can never be peaceful. Right? So if you can't, the doubt in the Vedic scriptures, the Vedic culture, Prabhupada's connection with the previous acharyas, do they say different things? You have a problem with, gurus, authority, all this. There's going to be a problem.
Does that make sense? They will not be happy. You know, that's the problem. You will not be happy. And we see it. It's a very practical thing. Here, and so, does that make sense on all this? So now Bhaktivinoda Thakur goes to the next point. Here someone may ask, how can one understand the truth of this Supreme who has many mutually contradictory natures, right? So he's really working out this contradictory, because one has to be able to accept it and see two things at once. Right? Otherwise, if you can't see two things at once, how do you deal with it? Right? The mother sees the child who is, you know, the most important thing to her. At the same time, they've done something wrong, so she has to chastise. So that's two contradictory things. So how does she deal? She just sees him, he smiles, and then she forgets about it? Most try that. It's a very popular one, you know. Especially up to about 5, it's very popular. After 5, the cuteness goes down a touch, and it doesn't work as well. Like that. So is there. Or does she just forget about that she has affection and then just chastises? No, she has to be able to balance the two at once. The person that she has affection for must be chastised. So she must find a way that they're chastised and maintain the affection. Does that make sense? Because if you put overbalance it one way or another, they won't be corrected, or you'll lose the relationship. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Maybe? You're not sure. Yeah. Okay. Sutra 4. To answer this question, the author of the sutra speaks the following words. Sutra 4. Okay. Sasach chid anando. Okay, well, forgot him. He is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. He cannot be known by ordinary knowledge, for he is known only by devotional service, right? So now we're taking it a step further. We've already established he has these contradictory. He is transcendental. So now we're introducing the element of devotional service here. He's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He cannot be known by ordinary knowledge, for he is known only by devotional service. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to Mantra 4, through mental speculation, even the greatest philosopher cannot know the Supreme Lord, who is the absolute personality of Godhead, right? Even the greatest philosopher. So we're not saying that someone is stupid and that's why they can't understand. No, it's because they don't have that devotion, they don't have that faith. You know, they're not applying it in the proper way. So we're accepting that you can have great scholars and very intelligent people, but that's still not a qualification to understand. Because otherwise, many people figure that they'll understand that way, right? So just because of that, they'll understand. You know, especially it's in all academies where you have knowledge, and someone who has that knowledge, the tendency is to become very proud, and they think because of their what they have, that's how their entrance into everything is. To some degree, it works, but sometimes to a lot of degree, it doesn't work. So that's a difficulty. Does that make sense? He can be known only by his devotees through his mercy. In the Brahma Samhita 5:34. So in other words, there's nothing we can do. Right? But at the same time, we do something. This is where one has to be able to adjust with the contradictory. There's nothing we can do to know God, but there's things we can do that God will be pleased that he'll reveal himself. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that so the action is the same, but we shouldn't think because I acted, therefore I got. That's karma kanda. Right? The karma mimamsa is even if there is a God, still you perform your proper activity, he is obliged to give you the result. Right? Because he's not independent. That puts us as the center. We're the independent ones. I want to do this, therefore I do the activity for that, I'll get the result. I want to do that. I choose. And so the better pious, the more options I have, because others have to give it to me. So they make themselves the center, so it's atheistic. Like that. Very pious. You're not going to get more pious than the karma, than the karma mimamsa, than Jaimini. But atheistic. You know? You have to do it. You know, so therefore we see is that those, one may say, well, no, but you know, here there's just karma, but if you have the monotheistic element to it, but the point is if I do the activity, and I do the religious activity, if anything materially goes wrong, then I have doubts in God, I lose faith. So therefore, then one can't understand. If one doesn't lose faith, then one will understand, move forward. Two people run into the same calamity. Two religious persons performing the same activities run into the same calamity. One doubts, you know, how could God allow this to happen? He'll never understand how it happened, right? And the other one understands that, you know, these things happen. God has some plan. Because of that, and controlling of the senses and having that faith, he'll actually understand and move forward. He'll develop. He'll like that. The other one won't. He'll regress. He might even give up religion, right? I mean, it's just like an unknown, not a very well-known thing, but I think it was Vlad. He was extremely religious. Vlad doesn't mean anything to you. Vlad, you would know him as Count Dracula. So, you know, the local, he's Vlad. You know. So, he was extremely religious. Huh?
Who did you say, Dracula?
Dracula, yeah. But he went off to a war with the Turks. Right, he went off a war with the Turks, and I think when he came back, his wife died or something. So all kinds of things happened, and so then he doubted. He was doing everything right. He was being religious. He was, you know, like that. So his thing is, how could God let this happen? So there must be no God. Then he became an atheist. So then his reputation, you know, increased. Does this make sense? Okay.
Huh? When that doubt creeps in, what would be the recommended course of action to restore one's faith? Like praying to the deities to clarify?
Yeah, you can do that, but then you're still that's not so faithful, because then you're saying that you have to prove yourself, then I'll have faith. No, it's that Krishna's there. He's in control of everything, and so how things unfold, there must be some plan, because we're a devotee. Otherwise, then still it's Krishna's rule that by karma it's unfolding. So that means either I've done something in the past that therefore I'm getting this result I wouldn't call good now, or Krishna is somehow or another using this for furthering my advancement. Either I'm getting purified because of improper mentality, or through this, I'm going to understand some lesson that's very great. Or being God, he's doing many things at once. Like that. But there's no question of not having the faith. In the beginning, yes, but after, it can't. So therefore, you can go to the deity and pray that I have this faith, and I know that you're doing this for my own good, that I'm getting distracted by this, by my attachment. That's okay. But just go to the deity, you know, reveal to me how it is, that why this is happening, you know, for my own. That means you want to understand it first, then only you'll have faith. So it may work, it may not, because the faithless person can find a problem anywhere. You know what I'm saying? You get sensitive to anything. And so, you know, it's just like, let's say somebody's normally, his skin is not oversensitive to heat. You get too close to heat, you'll notice it. But you go out in the sun, you cook, it doesn't bother you. But if you're sunburned or something where your skin's very sensitive, you can't go out in the sun, you can't get near a fire. Everybody else can, but you can't, oh, it's so hot, it's so this and that. So you'll find that a person can find fault in anything and everything at all times, all places, all circumstances. Anything that's, you know, someone has a problem with authority, they can find a problem everywhere. You know, they have a problem with submission, they can find that everywhere. Oh, you submissive, see, you got to exploit, you know, this, that, or so it just goes on and on. So you have, the faith has to be there. Does that make sense? The faith has to be there. Then it will be revealed. So that dependency on the Lord and all that. So it's just a matter of which side you're looking at it.
This mentality of blaming, is that the symptom of a lack of faith?
It's a lack of faith. It's a symptom of dependency. It's the fault finding generally means ego. We don't want to accept that we have something to do with it.
So I want to look good.
Yeah, I want to look good, I want to be good, I want to get what I want. You know, so therefore, it's a whole thing. But ultimately, it comes back is that it's not going the way I want, and therefore, it's not going the way I want. It's not going. I'm not in control the way I want enjoyment. So I'm not the controller and enjoyer here because it's not happening the way I want it to happen. Because the way I want it to happen is I've accepted, okay, Krishna's God, I serve him, everything goes nice. So I'm in control that I serve. And therefore, I should get my result, which is enjoyment. You know, so still, it's a business of God. So that's where all these little fine points in the philosophy are to get us beyond that. Because it may look like I'm doing everything right, but yes, but is the mentality right? Like that.
You know, there is this standard argument against God, I suppose you could say, that a devotee will justify anything to defend God.
Yeah, and an atheist will also find everything, he'll justify everything to say there's no God. But the point is there's more points for God than against. You know what I'm saying? If we have a management, you know, if you can work on consensus, great. But if as long as you have a majority, then it works. You know what I'm saying? Because how is it just, you know, kids sit out in the backyard, light off firecrackers, and nothing happens, right? Because if the principle was, if there's a big bang, something will be created. Something will start to come in order. It should happen every time there's an explosion. So why it only happened once? And if it's chance, then why is this atheist so committed to science? Science means it's not chance. It's going to happen like this. Like that. So it's contradictory.
All right, well, the atheist will say somehow or other.
But somehow or another, that's a nice statement. But that's your faith. So therefore then, Prabhupada says to the guy, so then at the time of death, then we'll find out who's right. After death, then you'll see if there's God or not. Or what's going on. That's what he said to that one professor in Russia. Does that make sense? So, somehow or another, that's faith. So, everybody has faith in something. It's just what you have faith in, that's all. So, because faith means you've already intellectually looked at it, and now you're not going to worry about looking at it anymore like that. Now you're going to start interacting with it. Because as long as you're using the intelligence, you're not interacting with it. This is a bicycle. Okay, here are the handlebars, they steer. Here's the seat, this is where you sit. Okay, here's the pedals, you know. You're still not really interacting with the bike. You know, you get on, okay, now I do this, if I turn this much, then I have to lean a little bit, and then this and that. So there's a very limited what you can do with it. But when it's spontaneous, then that's when you can do something with it. So the natural thing is this: when you're spontaneous, then that's when the things happen. So once you've gone to the spontaneous platform of accepting and that faith and interacting with God, it gets dynamic, the relationship. Otherwise, before, it's slow or doesn't exist. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Thank you.